From the land grant of our city in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 13th day of July 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jim Bauer. He's at Bauer Trading out of Lafayette, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the agricultural cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. That's their Clymers ethanol production plant. Along the way, we'll check in with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. By the way, I've had that discussion with him already. We talk about triple-digit temperatures for next week, at least in a good part of the Western Corn Belt, thinking west of the Mississippi River. So stay with us for this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. And visit us online, too, at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the Wednesday afternoon numbers from the CME Group in Chicago. July corn up 16 at 365 and three quarters. December 369 and three quarters, 9.5 higher. July soybeans up 20 and three quarters, $11.28. November at $11 a nickel and a quarter, up 8.25. Bean oil 6 cents lower at 3065. Bean meal at 388.50, up $10.20. July soft red winter wheat up 2.25 at 426.25. The hard red July unchanged today at 407. And three quarters. Live cattle futures in the August, $2.52.5 higher, $111.42.5. The final trade August contract in the feeder cattle at 135, rather 139, and a nickel. That's up 45 cents. Lean hogs for the day at $80.25, up 30 cents. Now let's turn our attention to the marketplace. We're joined by Jim Bauer. He's at Bauer Trading in Lafayette, Indiana. Jim, thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon.
Tell me a bit about why the corn market rallied in Chicago today.
Well, we have talked for years about these grain markets, and there's one thing that I've always kind of adhered to from a trader standpoint, advisory standpoint, is that the spreads are the language of the market. The spreads are the language of the market because they kind of tell you how the market feels overall currently as well as out ahead. And if you look at the December of 16 corn contract versus the December of 17 corn contract on the spread, the bull spread, long the front, short the deferred, we've seen that market move from about minus 17 up to plus 34, all the way back down to minus, to almost minus 20, just in a period of about 2 or 3 weeks at a viciously hard sell-off once a good portion of the Midwest got precip, as well as just better overall pollination conditions. Now, today, I think the market has decided to maybe put a little bit of that premium back into the marketplace with the weather forecast, as you just described. Relatively benign short term, but the extended models, particularly from July 21st through July 28th, look very hot with temperatures plus 6 to plus 12 over normal over almost in the entire corn and soybean belt, with particular heat sectors, or what we call heat sinks, running as high as temperatures of 113. So we'll see if that validates. But the market acts after this big of a sell-off in the spreads, in the bull spreads, coming sharply lower. The market decided to put a little premium back in.
I know that for a 10-day period starting late next week and all through the following week, because we'll have Drew Lerner on at the bottom of the half hour, and I've already had this discussion with him, he too is looking for those really high temperatures, particularly west of the Mississippi River, between the Missouri and the Mississippi, he says, with some really triple-digit numbers the further west that you go. Can we build in a whole bunch more premium, and how good is the crop at the moment, and what kind of difficulties do you think it will cause?
Well, I'm going to speak as a trader as opposed to a producer, grower, or as an advisor. As a pure trader, and of course, I've been in this business a long time. I've seen many, many weather markets. But I think what we want to kind of watch here is if the market's going to build in that heat base from July 21st to the 28th, as you just described. That one's probably going to be built totally in by tomorrow. Now, my experience as a trader is that as that ridge probably will retrograde to the west a little bit, allowing some cooler and more mild conditions to come in, maybe short term, the next high-pressure system to come has a tendency, based upon my experience, to be a little bit stronger. And if that one retreats, the third and probably the kind of the final one has a tendency to be really strong as we enter into the more critical months of August, particularly for soybeans. So I still think soybeans are the grain complex leaders. They have the most potential of explosive power if they get into a major weather market. But just because of this one weather front might diminish, that doesn't mean there can't be several more come during the month of August.
What do you think of yesterday's USDA reports?
Well, I don't think there was any big surprises. I think the surprise that maybe caught me the most off guard was the fact that they trimmed the corn feed residual number to the degree that they did. Essentially, it seems to me that wheat is going to come in on a global scale, really compensate with a lot of product available to the market for feed grains, not only here in the United States, but particularly in some of the countries that don't have the money to pay for, more expensive corn. But I was just looking at kind of the S&D table on corn. We're currently, if everything goes right, looking at a 16.2% stocks-to-use ratio. That's the highest since 2005-2006, when the September of 2006 U.S. corn stocks clocked in around 1.967 billion bushels. And we really need a corn yield to fall about 6.4 bushels per acre, or 4%, before the September of 2017 U.S. corn stocks dip below 1.750 billion bushels. So these next several weeks, Todd, are going to be really important to see if these weather models can really kind of put more premium back in, as you asked me just a few minutes ago. Yes, I think it can come back in, but it's going to take weather forecasts that bring alarming conditions to that grower's mind.
It appears, based off of the weekly crop progress reports, the crop is in really good condition. Though I did make note that agricultural economist Scott Irwin today on his Twitter account put out some pretty good graphics showing the relationship between those crop progress reports and final yield. About half of what he believes moves the corn yield is now in place. But there was a plus or minus of about 10 bushels, so a pretty good swing. That's 20 bushels from one end to the other. So we have a lot of this particular season left to go. I take it that you're still of a mind, though, based on your comments earlier, that soybeans are the ones that really have the opportunity to really move the marketplace.
Yes, we can ill afford to have any yield loss whatsoever. We're using a stock-to-use ratio that's basically the lowest in several years. I think the market's going to need a lot more, I could say, validator or conclusive evidence of at least a trend line or higher 2016 U.S. soybean yield before this market's really going to give up much premium at all. Now, again, going back to that, the spreads or the language of the market, I was just looking at the September of 2016 bean spread versus March of 2017. We've been using that for some replacement hedges for growers who've already sold some cash beans at a higher level. But, that spread itself had a high of about plus 56, plus 57 on that correction, dropped all the way down to about plus 26, and now you're trading at about plus 30. So that market, through the spreads, again, the spreads are the language of the market. That tells me the market wants to make absolutely sure that going into August we've got optimal conditions for yield. Anything less than that, or anything that's really a negative to yield, probably requires that market to put more premium in, because I still think it's going to be a very, very tight situation as we go into July, August, September from an international standpoint for the demand of beans, meal, and oil. Brazil probably is at their final legs of pushing out product, and we would be one of the only ones available at that particular time. So, again, I still think very strongly at this moment in time, beans are still the complex leader, but watch those spreads, though. They'll tell you what it wants to do in an indirect sense.
Imports or exports to China have slowed just a bit this month over the previous month. Did that surprise you?
Of course, they've been so aggressive up until just very, very recently. I think they have scouts, too, and they're watching this situation. They looked at this corn crop, and they looked at the bean crop so far, and I underlined the word so far. They probably feel a little bit more comfortable with the way the crop condition ratings have been coming across the board, not only for corn, but for soybeans too, as well as spring wheat. But again, I wouldn't be one bit surprised if they see any further threat from a weather standpoint, particularly after the month of July as we go into August, particularly for soybeans. If they see any further threat, I think they're going to be back in real quick.
And finally, you tend to look at the marketplace, from what I recall, as more of a globalist. What's on the global economic stage that gives you pause to think?
First of all, on a domestic, let's say domestic, every place I go or travel, I see growth. I feel the U.S. economy is chugging along at a pretty brisk pace, a lot better than what we're led to believe by Washington and some of their officials. I mean, that's just personal, watching the truck traffic, watching the warehouse movement, watching people on traveling. I mean, things seem to be better to me than you're going. I'm watching this bond situation, where, as you know, the higher the bond, the lower the interest rate. But with the interest rates at or near negative interest rates, you know, we've been following a kind of a policy here at Bauer Trading to try to lock in long-term rates by selling or shorting the bonds. Now, that's been a very volatile situation. It's not meant for the timid, and it's certainly not meant for everybody. But I can remember interest rates at 16%. So when I get down to negative interest rates, you know, I'm getting in the position to lock in long-term rates to protect the interest rates that I feel will eventually creep higher over term. From a global standpoint, I think the Brexit situation will slowly but surely kind of calm itself down. Then we're just going to have to wait and see what kind of debt structure the world can handle. But again, from a U.S. standpoint, I think things are better than we're led to believe.
Thanks so much for taking the time with me today, Jim.
Hey, have a great day.
You too. Jim Bauer is with Bauer Trading. He joins us from his Lafayette, Indiana office. In today's agricultural news, Donald Trump's campaign trail appearance in Indiana last night with Hoosier State Governor Mike Pence was seen as a tryout of sorts, and a strong indication Trump is flirting with picking Pence to be his vice president. While in Congress, Pence served on the House Agriculture Committee for 5 years, advocating on behalf of Production Ag in his southeastern Indiana district. As governor, Pence signed a measure to give farmers a break from property taxes, as well as a small farm food safety bill. And he's been a vocal supporter of the Renewable Fuel Standard, among other initiatives. However, Pence differs strongly on trade policy with Donald Trump. He has long been a supporter of trade policies like NAFTA and TTIP and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Well, let's stay with politics, but we'll move directly to Washington, D.C., where the House finally got its hand on the Senate's version of the GMO labeling bill. And its first move was to see if that the amended-minded members would keep their hands off of it. The House Rules Committee passed a rule Tuesday evening to bar amendments to S-764 during floor consideration, thwarting potential designs of lawmakers who would love to amend the measure to make it closer to the voluntary GMO labeling standard the lower chamber passed last July. The rule paves the way for the final House vote on the GMO labeling bill, a compromise brokered by Senate Ag Committee Chairman Pat Roberts and Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow. The bill would make GMO labeling mandatory and provide a trio of options: electronic labeling on package language or a USDA-created symbol. It would also preempt the mandatory labeling measure that hit the books in Vermont earlier this month and orders USDA to craft rules for product labeling within 2 years. Well, we'll stay in Washington, D.C., but move from legislation to regulation. The comment period for EPA's proposed 2017 renewable fuel standard closed Monday, and as far as we can tell, the responses to EPA's proposed volumes fell along predictable lines. The National Corn Growers Association said in its comment that EPA should follow the congressional mandates. The American Petroleum Institute thinks EPA is cutting it too fine with the ethanol gasoline blend, or what we generally term as the blend wall. And finally today, an agriculture official in Russia expects the country to begin shipping China significant amounts of wheat in the fall when the new crop is harvested. Last year, Russia shipped 470,000 metric tons of grain to China. This year, the country has exported China more than 320,000 metric tons of grain, and grain legume crops in Russia could ship China more than 650,000 to 700,000 metric tons for the whole year if the trend continues. Russia's ag ministry says development of transportation infrastructure is key to increasing the grain shipments and notes that two such projects are currently being implemented. Meanwhile, Ukraine's ag ministry expects the country to export 35.3 million metric tons of grain during the 2016-17 marketing year, including 11.64 million metric tons of wheat. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. You know, prospects for congressional action on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, not TTIP, but TPP, in either the Obama administration or the next administration may be dimming. This according to the U.S. Senate's former trade chair. Former finance chair Chuck Grassley of Iowa was already skeptical the TPP, worth billions in new agriculture and other export sales, would come up in a post-election lame duck session. Now, asked about anti-TPP planks in both the Democratic and GOP convention platforms, Grassley says hope is dimming for the trade deal.
If President Obama were to put it before the Congress 90 days before it could be voted on by Congress, then it would be a problem for Hillary Clinton. And even though it passed and it would be a legacy for this president, positive one, it would be very negative towards Hillary Clinton.
Clinton publicly opposes TPP in her campaign, as does Donald Trump, though Clinton pushed for the trade agreement while serving as Obama's Secretary of State. Now Republican Grassley argues President Obama finds himself in an awkward position with Clinton opposing the TPP.
He'd rather have her succeed him than Trump, so I don't think there's much chance that it can come up either in this presidency or next year unless Hillary Clinton and or Trump change their mind.
Clinton opposes TPP action in a lame duck Congress, and the GOP convention platform initially did the same, but that was struck in a move that spares pro-TPP Republicans, but also prevents those opposed from outflanking Democrats on the left. Meantime, Grassley says no TPP is a win for China and a loss for U.S. trading partners.
I think it's going to drive them closer to China. And they wanted to negotiate with the United States because they didn't want to negotiate with China. And they kind of wanted to economically, considering China being the second largest economy in the world, they wanted some advantage over China, competitive advantage, and help joining the United States is the only way to get it done.
Grassley argues TPP's a national security issue, giving the U.S. a chance to join with allies in containing China, bent on expanding its power in the South China Sea. But Grassley admits national security is rarely brought up as an argument for trade deals. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. So good to have you on, Drew. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. I hope everyone's having a good day.
I have been having a good day, although it looks like the past couple of days, we'll have some relief, and then we're going to get warm again next week.
Absolutely. Definitely rain will be coming across the western Corn Belt and into the central areas on a northwest flow pattern here for the next four or five days, I guess. We'll be seeing two or three little disturbances coming from the Dakotas into the heart of the Midwest, and there will be some very heavy rainfall in several counties scattered across that region. They're going to be random occurrences, so it's going to be very, very difficult to try to pinpoint who's going to get the 2 and 3 inch amounts of rain, but they are going to occur. I would say some areas in Missouri are favored for tonight and early tomorrow. We'll probably see some spots in Nebraska and Iowa maybe the next night. And as we get towards the end of the week, we'll probably get something going in South Dakota and parts of Minnesota headed towards Illinois. And I do think Illinois will certainly have its opportunity for a little bit of rainfall from each of these events, although it's probably not going to be very evenly distributed across the state. Now, once we get to the first part of next week, of course, that's when that ridge starts to develop rather aggressively, and it will be a noted event, most definitely. Now, we will have all this moisture feeding back into the atmosphere as the ground gets heated up. It's going to evaporate that moisture, so it's going to get very humid. I'm almost more concerned about our livestock across the Midwest than I am for the crops, just simply because the relative humidity is going to be so high and the temperatures will eventually get pretty high as well, especially in the western Corn Belt. those afternoon temperatures in the west will probably get up in, well into the 90s and over 100 degrees between the Mississippi and Missouri rivers, and probably near 100 at the Missouri River and points westward at above 100 during the hottest days, which will be probably in the middle of next week through all of the following weekend, getting us out to about the 26th of August. So a lot of interesting weather coming up. The easternmost Midwest won't be quite so hot, and they're not going to get quite as much precipitation before the ridge kicks in. So places like Ohio and northeastern Indiana, parts of Michigan, they're already a little dry, may actually get drier quicker than some of these areas in the western Corn Belt where it'll be so much hotter.
So you're talking about triple-digit heat in more than 50% of the primary corn-producing counties in the United States.
I do think that'll be the case. It'll last for about a week to maybe as much as 10 days. But I think as we get towards the latter part of that period, we'll start seeing the ridge shift further to the west, and the opportunities for relief will begin to evolve. Now, while the ridge is so strong, I mean, everyone's focus is going to be on the ridge for a while, but when you get a chance and you're looking at radar for the country, notice while the ridge is over the heart of the Midwest that there will be a significant influx of tropical moisture coming up from Mexico through the Rocky Mountains and into the northern plains on the backside of this high-pressure ridge. That should set the stage for our potential for some relief coming up in August, because that moisture will come across the northern plains. The ridge will shift a little bit back to the west, weaken somewhat, so the top of the ridge is not so strong, and the disturbances will start coming across the northern plains into the northern and eastern Midwest, offering some relief periodically to those areas. But the southwest part of the Corn Belt will probably still be under the influence of the ridge through a fairly large part of that period of time, staying the hottest and driest part of the Corn Belt.
So as I visualize it, it must be a clockwise spin, comes up across and runs clockwise across the top and then drops into the areas that will get it from the northwest. Is that right?
That would be correct, yes. The Dakotas into Michigan, parts of Ohio, Indiana. And again, this will be late in the second week of the forecast that will actually start to occur. So we'll have a week to 10 days here where it'll be pretty hot and muggy, and steady rates of drying occurring across the heart of the region.
Drew, it's always good to talk with you.
Well, thank you very much, and have a good afternoon.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.